Morning, Ron.
Good morning.
I'm just waiting for indication that the recording has started.
Give me a minute.
This call is now being recorded. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I'll do a quick roll call. On today's call, we have Joe Saint-Sauveur, Mike Rodenbach, Greg Aaron, James Bladel, Randall Vaughan, Paul Diaz, Rod Rasmussen. We have from staff Marika Konings, Glenda Saint-Géry, myself, Gisela Gruber-White, and apologies for all Wednesday calls. We have Cal Ferrer. Thank you.
Thank you, Gisela, and good morning, everyone, to the diehards that are getting this report finished and over the finish line. So we have a list of the final edits that Marika had posted to the mailing list. Does everyone have that bulleted list?
Yes. Dave joined, by the way.
Oh, hi, Dave. Okay, so if we can start there, and Marika, since I have a kind of a rough connection area here, maybe perhaps you could go through each of the lists, and then I'll jump in for the items if we want to discuss them. But I think essentially what we're looking for is broad, if not unanimous, consent to these changes.
Okay, and then just to point out, the changes that are listed in this email are the ones that I thought were more substantial. Well, there are more edits, but they're more spelling or, you know, just minor corrections. But if anyone else has found any other changes that they would like to discuss, you know, would suggest that maybe when we get through this list, they raise them and we can consider those as well. So the first one on this list is line 332 to 334.
Marika, can you just take one step back, please? What email are you referring to?
I sent an email on Monday, July 27th at 16:24, in which I basically outlined the changes that have been made between the previous version and this version based on comments submitted by Dave, James, and Joe. But to facilitate the review, I highlighted those that made substantial changes, but made changes to the content or meaning of certain sections. So
got
to facilitate,
okay. I've got it in front of me now.
Yeah, you're fine. And as I said, so if there are any other items people would like to discuss or review, I would propose that at the end of this list they bring those up as well. So the first one is looking at line 332 to 334. Three lines have been added there stating that the FastFox Working Group does identify solutions that could result in pull elements, but the FastFox Working Group could not reach a consensus on whether these should be policy, best practices, or industry solutions. And if I remember correctly, I think, Dave, you suggested that this should be added, no?
Just a minute, I'm actually looking at this. I don't think that's mine. Perhaps it is. I'd have to go back and look. I don't have any objection to it.
Is there any objection to adding this section?
This is Paul. I'm just perhaps a wordsmithing request. In 333, instead of saying identify solutions that could result, how about something like responses or answers or something? Solutions to me just means, you know, sort of like, why don't you take this? I guess I'm just hung up on the word solutions. It seems like if I'm a third party reading this, I'm wondering, well, if they have an answer, why didn't they come to consensus on it? Does anybody just share that it seems that we say we identify solutions, but then we go on to say, yet we couldn't even identify they should be policy practices or industry solutions? I'm not really.
Would you prefer the idea or the word ideas? Or
just some other word. Am I the only one who just seems the word solutions is sort of, you know, it should be the end result, and yet if we've identified it, it just begs the question, why couldn't the group come to agreement on whether it should be policy practices?
Okay. I think
might be a little thing.
That's fair, I think.
Yeah, maybe if we did either change it to ideas or some other word, as you suggested, or even put potential in front of the word solutions.
Sure.
While we're wordsmithing, can we change does identify to has identified?
I agree with that change. More active than
has identified potential solutions.
Yeah.
That work for everybody?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay.
So this is changed then to the FastFox working group has identified potential solutions that could result. Everyone fine with that? Okay.
Yeah.
Then the next one is a comment on line 673. And let me just scroll down as well.
This was, I believe, Joe's comment that we should try to put this list in some sort of order, either alphabetical or some such, and I think that makes sense. So.
Yeah, and he added as well the suggestion of maybe ordering it on the number of calls attended. I mean, of course, I would add another dimension to it because there are quite a number of names on this list that haven't participated or have only participated in a few calls.
I should probably clarify that's actually for the second table. So in terms of this table at 4-1, I guess name. But then for the final table on, like, the last page, that's the one I was saying it sort of seems like that's trying to report on the call frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one where I think it might make sense to have that one ordered by call frequency. So this one obviously doesn't have call frequency. No need to screw with it in that regard. So, but just to kind of alphabetize it by last name.
Okay. Does anyone have any objections to reordering this table? Going once? Okay.
So alphabetize it on last name. That's
I think so.
Okay.
Alphabetize that on last names, and then if we look at the last table, if we can...
Yeah. On call frequency. Okay, we'll do that. Because we will need to add as well, of course, this call to that list, so we need to change it anyway. Okay, that has been noted. Then the next one is change to line 785. I think we initially had there an alternative viewpoint, and I think, Dave, this was again you that suggested taking that away as I think it linked with some other comments we made and changing it to members of the FastFox working group observed that artificially limiting TTLs via consensus policies will simply move the problem beyond the purview of ICANN. Any?
Well, it's actually more complicated than that. I don't think actually TTLs can be limited by an ICANN consensus policy because it's an RFC issue. So it's an IETF thing. So I don't think this wording captures the situation.
You know, Greg, I'm not certain it's an IETF issue because it's an operational practice, and you know, it would be. There hasn't been a BCP out of the IETF since I had a full head of hair.
Well,
so
I wrote about TTLs pretty extensively in the registry constituency comments, and the issue with TTLs is that they're not set. Effective TTLs are not set by registries or usually even registrars. They're set by hosting providers and whoever controls and operates name servers. So to effectively deal with the problem, you have to basically change the way the RFCs work. If there is a consensus policy that was binding upon registries or registrars, it wouldn't matter. It wouldn't actually solve the problem and affect TTLs in a meaningful way.
So Greg and Dave and anyone else who wants to chime in, is there a way, without transforming this sentence into a couple of paragraphs, is there a way to state that artificially limiting TTLs is not a what I want to say, quick or silver bullet type solution? Is there a way to say that without bringing in all the dependencies and all the different factors that play into that?
Well, let me explain what I was trying to accomplish in one sentence, because I think Greg is overreaching what my ambition was. We've been criticized in a number of fora, you know, when we go and talk, we being the ICANN community, about why don't you just simply, you know, restrict TTL. There's also been, you know, a lame effort by someone in the IETF to do the same thing. The answer that I think is appropriate from the ICANN community is, even if we did this, you know, it wouldn't have any effect. So I'm really not ambivalent about how we say it. I just think it's important that we say, look, we've listened to you, and you've told us that we should do this. But if we did it, it would have no effect. It's the same as telling people the speed limit is 55 and you can't drive over 55. Well, you can't drive over 55 unless, it's an absolutely scofflaw kind of situation. So we have the same situation in, you know, if we told registries and registrars they weren't allowed to put anything in the zone file that had a TTL of less than some number of clicks. So I really don't care how we say that. And if other people feel strongly that we shouldn't say anything, that's fine too. I'm just trying to answer something that has been asked of us over and over and over again.
Okay.
I mean, I think the answer there, Dave, is that what I see is people who are asking about TTLs need to dig into actually how it works in the DNS.
I understand.
ICANN gets criticism about something. It's not necessarily a compelling reason to respond to it if it's. It is, in my opinion, irrelevant. Because the registries and the registrars don't control the TTLs on these domains ultimately. I mean, we have a note later in the paper at, let me see. Eleven ten that touches on it, but
Greg, if we would remove via consensus policies, would that address some of your concerns? Because then we don't say that, you know, it would be ICANN doing it. It might then as well be through another means like IETF. But would that be
There are two issues. Dave is, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, you're trying to say that if ICANN did policy, then it would just move the problem to the CCTLDs.
It would move the problem to anyone, actually. And you can hijack the zone and you can stick it on a bot and you can do whatever you want with it. The problem isn't solely our remit to solve, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
And we, yeah.
Now I understand what you're trying to say. That was a good encapsulation.
Yeah.
I think the members of the FastSox working group observed that artificially limiting TTLs will be ineffective, period.
That's fine, too. Yeah. I mean, I'm happy with that. I just want to call attention to it, you know, and then if we want, since Greg did a great job of writing in great detail in the registry constituency statement, we can just say that, you know, the reasons are amplified in the registry constituency statement in Annex, whatever it is.
That's a good idea, Dave, if we can refer to you know, something that expands upon why we feel it's ineffective. But I agree that if we can shorten that to just that sentence and then diffuse some of that criticism, because I've seen it too, Dave.
Why not just go ahead and say that ICANN does not control operational TTL values for the DNS?
That works too.
Yep.
So members of the FastSox working group observed that artificially limiting TTLs will be ineffective and
ineffective, period.
Ineffective, period.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then if you want, you can add those statements. Yeah.
Can we just put, it should be noted that ICANN does not control the operational TTL values for the DNS? Was that the sentence?
Right.
Okay. And then do we want to add an after the first sentence, for further information, please see registry constituency statement and annex whatever number it is, so people can find more information?
I think that's a good idea.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, that works. Thank you.
Okay. I think I captured that all.
Okay.
Then the next, I don't know, does anyone have any other further comments on this one, or we can move to the next one? The next one is a deletion at line 884. There was a bullet point noting that, the first one is the first select working groups offers the following initial working answers to the charter questions, but would like to emphasize that continued work is required in the following areas. And the bullet that has been deleted there is a robust technical and process definition of fast flux. And I think Dave, you suggested this one, basically stating that the working group has developed a robust definition, so I think you said that you felt that this could be removed there. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Are there any objections?
My dog is emphatically excited about this.
No, I think that's probably legacy language from prior to when we finished out the definition section. So.
I remember.
At least that was my take on it.
So then the next is in addition to line 1111 to 1112. Let me just look that one up. And there it's basically a reference again to the registry statement for further information that refers to it here. And then basically a sentence has been added saying, the Fast Tracks Working Group finds a registry constituency statement sufficient and accurate for the purpose of this report, for the purposes of this report. Any comments? Okay, then we move to the next one, which is a comment on line 1483. Just moving down there. I think I've noted one down because I actually don't have a comment here. Oh, sorry, I think this should be 1438. There's a comment from Dave on this sentence related to the port 53 traffic, in which he notes, the context is missing. Does this mean that ISP should not allow residential PCs to accept DNS queries? Dave, do you have a suggestion on how to add the context? Or?
I'm asking a question. I don't understand. You know, I'm not certain what this is alluding to.
So essentially what the deal there is that a growing number of ISPs are going ahead and doing things like intercepting DNS query traffic that may be going to rogue DNS resolvers off-network. So if you think about things like a DNS changer malware, essentially what happens is those guys go ahead and hijack the DNS traffic by actually changing the resolvers that the customer uses. So some ISPs have taken to blocking or intercepting and redirecting port 53 traffic that's going to odd places other than their servers. So that's kind of what's meant by managing port 53 traffic.
Okay. So I thought that what you were saying here was that broadband providers were not allowing customers to host name service, and that you were referring to queries that were being directed out to a broadband, an IP address allocated to a broadband network.
In this context, that is correct.
Yeah, so that was the context I was missing. So,
right.
And if no one else had a problem with that, then we don't have to make the change.
Do we need to change port 53 traffic to provide something that's a little more verbose and what's said here?
I mean, you could change it to say forbid customers from hosting name servers on residential broadband hosts or something like that.
I like the word managing better than forbid, but So managing DNS resolvers that exist on customer broadband networks. Any thoughts there?
Yeah. That's
okay.
I was asking a question. I think that works.
That's a good catch.
So just to confirm, it would then read, controlling that DNS traffic requires managing DNS resolvers that exist on customer broadband networks, locking external DNS queries, coming, and so on and on. So we just take out the port 53 traffic?
Right.
Okay. Just to make sure I got that.
Right. I'd say probably remove managing port 53 traffic, all four words, as it were.
Okay.
Do we lose a verb if we take out managing?
Yeah, but managing DNS resolvers, that stays, no?
And you get the gerund blocking in there, so it actually takes care of that. I knew that English class would come in there somewhere. Gerund, woo!
Okay, all right.
That one class you took.
And I hated it, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Okay, the next one is a comment on line 1497. Another one from Dave, asking whether it is appropriate to explain what a net flow slow flow is and how this would help trace back to traffic flow origins.
And this was also part of what I've put forth as well, where I was saying, are we talking about a category of tools, or are we naming products here? Because I'm not familiar with net flow or S flow. And I'm thinking that perhaps we could simply just perhaps even a footnote, if someone can provide a URL that describes this particular tool, what it does, what its capabilities are, what its limitations are, something like that.
Well, my recollection is, as I sent in pointers to the two RFCs, could we just go ahead and use the RFCs to go ahead and kind of clarify what they are and what they do?
Excellent idea, Joe.
Joe, would you mind resending those to me? I'm sure I have them
somewhere. I didn't see that.
Okay.
Okay, so I'll add those links then in the footnote to that specific issue. Then the next one is an addition on line 1550. I think it relates a bit to the previous discussion we have. It's an addition that basically says, the working group considered several possible options, including governing time-to-live values, and then between brackets, minimum bounds on TTLs within the scope of ICANN policy and remit. I think, Dave, this was, again, you, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the line number? I'm missing that.
It's 1550.
Thank you.
Didn't we just say that limiting time-to-live values is not within ICANN's remit?
All right, I think with the earlier changes, I'm wondering if that parenthetical
is
even required. Yeah.
Actually, that was supposed to read, minimum bounds on TTLs is not within the scope of ICANN policy and remit. I think this paragraph is actually legacy, and all we really need to say here is that this paragraph could summarize what we had as a discussion earlier. It could simply say the work group considered several possible options, including governing time to live values, and then eliminate most of this and concluded that establishing minimum bounds on TTLs is not within the scope of ICANN policy and remit.
Maybe we can also reference the...
And reference the residue constituency statement again, because it's not true that the last statement is in fact incorrect. It says the working group did not reach consensus. I don't think any of us agree that or believe that we have any right to tinker with TTL values.
So would it be sufficient then just to add to that sentence, like minimum bounds on TTLs are not within the scope of ICANN policy in remit, see registry constituency statement for further details?
I think something like that, Marika, and borrowing heavily from the previous previous discussion on this earlier in the document.
Okay. So I'll make that change. Then the next one is 1567. That's actually 1568, I think. It has moved down. So it's again a comment from Dave related to the sentence mandating that multiple contacts must confirm DNS updates before they go into effect would be problematic. And the comment from Dave reads, I have to object to this claim on the basis that ASSEC is making such a recommendation in ASSEC 40, measures to protect registration services against exploitation or misuse. The claim here suffers from the same tunnel vision that caused people to conclude that short TTLs indicate fast flux. If you couple strong verification measures, non-reputable, with the rule that multiple contacts must confirm DNS updates, you would reduce or mitigate the likely abuse by criminals suggested in line 1707.
Can I see what Dave is saying is that we're kind of being contradictory a little bit, but I'm wondering if the last sentence here is, I think, the salient point of this paragraph is, you know, once we get into compromised domains and we're talking about hijacked domains and things like that, really anything goes as far as abusive behavior. So I want to be sure that we're not taking two steps down a slippery slope by trying to offer commentary or suggestions on that problem. So I'm wondering if this paragraph can be shortened or perhaps eliminated altogether. I mean, it is something that we've considered, but you know, it starts to open up a number of other issues.
I think
so. One thing we could do is we could punt it to ESSAC, and we could say that, you know, mandating, you know, or we could just mention that, you know, the Security and Stability Advisory Committee is studying whether, providing multiple contacts to confirm DNS updates would be an effective deterrent to certain, certain aspects of malicious use of domain names.
Someone else was trying to get in there as well.
I was just going to say that, you know, I'm not sure that we're really seeing people hijacking domain names to go ahead and use those fast flux. They just go ahead and buy them. So if they've bought them, presumably they'd be able to supply the multiple contacts that might be required. I just don't see it being an effective measure. I mean, the multiple contacts thing is really more designed to ensure that eBay doesn't get pointed to some random location in, you know, South America, right?
Correct.
Sure. This particular measure or deterrent, is to protect more of the legitimate organization that has an account compromised than somebody maliciously alters their main service. So you probably, I imagine that the incidents where fast flux actors would, malicious fast flux actors would be doing that would be small because it's not as straightforward a path. You're right.
Okay, so Dave, we've got a couple of options here to shorten this paragraph or to throw it overboard as maybe it was a side topic that really didn't take us in any new directions. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the original reason why all these bullet items were here was was for the working group to have acknowledged the suggestions made in SAC 25. So I understand now what Joe was saying, and maybe the right thing to do is to rewrite that sentence saying that this would not really be effective or would not really be an effective deterrent in the fast flux case. Because such or domains used by fast flux are typically newly registered as opposed to compromised registrations. I think that would certainly satisfy my comment, and I think it would be an accurate summary of what Joe aptly described as the typical case as opposed to the corner case.
Okay, so something else.
I would not throw this paragraph out. I mean, at least the concept, because it has been raised as a potential solution in some sectors as a way of doing this. So we need to acknowledge it and limitations that come with it.
Okay, so something along the lines of managing the multiple contacts, mandating that multiple contacts must confirm DNS updates before they go into effect is not a viable solution, as this would, as FastFlux, domains used in FastFlux are not necessarily compromised domains.
Not typically compromised domains, but newly registered domains.
Right, and then the second sentence, also solving for hijacked domains, is a separate problem outside the scope of this working group. Is that too clumsy, or does that work?
It's fine for me.
Works for me.
I can live with it.
We went over that pretty fast. So.
I think I got the first sentence, but do we want to take out the sentence on such a validation process? Okay, so then just to confirm, mandating that multiple contacts must confirm DNS updates before they go into effect is not a viable solution, as domain names used in FastFlux are not necessarily hijacked domains. Also, solving for hijacked domains is a separate problem outside the scope of this working group. Correct?
Yes.
I like it.
Yeah.
Okay. Then we move on to 2119. I think we're getting now to the conclusions section. So 2119, there is a... Let me just read it. There was a proposed addition deleted, see here under, but I think that actually was deleted in the previous review, following a comment from Joseph Savar, who strongly disagrees with the proposed language, as criminal FastFlux involves hosting on compromised broadband connected hosts, while legitimate agile hosting does not. I think the problem is that you cannot actually see the little deletion anymore. But
what line number were we on again?
This is 2119.
Well, this particular change is 2116, is where that couple of lines above, correct?
Yeah, there was a section there that was deleted, but because I accepted all the changes between the previous version and this one, you can actually not see what was deleted.
I think my point simply was that there was a lot of kind of dithery language at the start of the section, and it really kind of reflected more of the old, earlier philosophy, and that's sort of where we are at currently, I think.
I can look back what that deletion was, but if I recall, I don't think it was a big thing. So then the next one is 2132, am I right? No, wait, because I actually didn't list this one. The one that I wanted to go to was actually the one in I think it actually lists 2119. That relates to the sentence, the FastFlux working group understands that many types of organizations can potentially be involved in FastFlux use, including registries, registrars, ISVs, hosting firms, and other online businesses. And Joe's made a comment there saying, strongly disagree. This assertion conflates various address agile methods with true FastFlux. With only rare exception, legitimate organizations will not knowingly be participating in FastFlux hosting methods exposing botted hosts. Legitimate organizations may be abused by FastFluxers, but that is a different issue.
Yeah, I think we need some wordsmithing here. I mean, involved in FastFlux use, I'm not sure what that means. It sounds pretty
correct. Yeah, I think I was the original person behind that sentence, and my purpose or point was just to kind of say that, you know, there's not one single bottleneck that we can, or one single type of organization that it sits at the crossroads of everything that someone would need that can mitigate the abuse of FastFlux just by controlling that particular type of organization. I think it goes back to what we were saying earlier, that the problem just moves somewhere else. So you know, if there's a better way of saying that instead of
we say affected, affected instead of involved?
Be affected by fast flux use. That would be,
except
I think
lot,
that would be fine.
Except a lot of them aren't really affected by it. They may be potentially unknowingly involved, but they're not really affected by it. So I think if you were to add potentially unknowingly involved, that could go ahead and take care of the issue.
Okay. And putting those two adverbs together, could we say parentheses and unknowingly or and potentially? How about potentially be involved in fast flux use without their knowledge or without their consent?
You could use exploited. No, sorry.
I guess the point is that they may be involved, but they're involved either peripherally or they're involved without their intentional assent. I mean, it's something where they are kind of roped into it, or they may not even know they're involved.
You could get rid of potentially and say unintentionally involved.
Okay. Because we've already captured potentially with the word can.
Yes.
I would agree.
Okay.
So the consensus, the Fast Flux Working Group understands that many types of organizations can be unintentionally involved in fast flux use.
Beauty.
Yep.
Correct. Okay. And the next one is 2132. Another comment from Joe. It relates to this, the sentence. Additionally, measures could be adopted to help ensure that parties reporting fast flux activity are trustworthy and uncompromised. And Joe states that the existence of objective tools for assessing fast fluxishness, such as the Mannheim formula, means that reporting party reputation is effectively irrelevant. A site is not fast flux because I say it is, but because the data confirms that it is. Trustworthiness has nothing to do with whether or not a given qualified domain name is fluxing or not.
Well, I'll go ahead and throw the simplest solution out there. What if we drop the sentence beginning with additionally?
That would suit me.
I mean, was the concern here that someone would compromise, that bad actors would compromise that reporting system?
I think traditionally it kind of comes out of the phishing world where people are concerned that someone's going to go ahead and have like a false positive, that they're going to report a legitimate site as phishing, get it taken down, and then somebody's going to go ahead and end up suing them. But in this case, FastFlux is something that's able to be objectively assessed, so the trustworthiness of the reporter really doesn't matter.
Well, let me ask you a question, Joe. How does somebody know when, are you suggesting that any time somebody reports fast flux activity that a registrar will always ask to see the data before they take action?
I think there should be data supporting an assertion that someone is fast flux, yes.
So I think that's part of what, you know, I think removing the sentence doesn't quite accomplish what you're suggesting, because I think what you're suggesting is that parties reporting fast flux activity will typically be required to present sufficient data to support the claim.
Well, no, they wouldn't need to support, or they wouldn't need to provide the data, because you wouldn't have any way of verifying that their data is accurate. You'd need to basically go ahead and accumulate your own data as a oversight entity.
How about additionally, measures can be adopted to ensure that reports of fast flux activity are verifiable? Because I think we've pretty well established that we can make fairly good judgments about that.
I think that's more accurate than deleting this or making a modification.
Okay. So we would just remove trustworthy and uncompromised and put verifiable in this place.
Mm-hmm.
That reports are verifiable.
Correct.
Excuse me.
So sorry, could you repeat then where the verifiable fits? So additional measures could be adopted to help ensure that parties reporting FastLux activity are verifiable?
You could just say FastLux activity reports are verifiable.
Okay.
Are
reports.
So we're still using the noun of parties, so I would suggest that we strike parties and then we'd say additionally measures could be adopted to help ensure that reports of FastLux activity are verifiable.
Yes. Fine.
Okay. Got that. Then the next one is on line 2137. I think it's again Joe. Relates to the sentence, those domains would still require some form of mitigation in order to end or prevent the undesired activity. And Joe notes, yes, mitigation would involve holding or suspending a domain involved with FastLux.
My point there just being that, you know, it kind of seems like we dance around the issue, which is essentially at some point these domains need to get dealt with. And the way they get dealt with is pretty straightforward, I think.
That's true.
Okay, and then the suggested language, I just wanted to point out that the same potentially be involved phrase is here that we addressed earlier. But that's probably a separate issue.
My point, I guess, is just that the sentence kind of makes it sound like there's going to be a gee whiz R&D effort required to figure out what to do here, and it's really a pretty straightforward process. If they're fluxing, you know, and it's illicit, they should go ahead and get held.
Okay, so locking or suspending?
My suggestion would be would still require suspension of the domains in order to end or prevent the undesired activity.
That would be fine.
That doesn't reflect reality, though. I mean, a lot of people delete. A lot of people point them to other places. So suspension is...
That's
pretty general.
True. That's not the only way you can do it. I mean, it's very... Unless the domain's in grace period, registrars usually don't delete them, but sometimes you catch these early. So suspension, it would be suspension, deletion, or...
Redirection?
Sinkholing, actually. Does that work for you, Rod?
That's fine.
So it would be those domains would still require suspension, deletion, or...
Sinkholing. Sinkhole is one word.
Sinkholing. Of the domains.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good luck, spell checker.
Yeah, I'm sure Ed won't recognize it. I think I'll have to Google it probably to make sure I get it right.
That dang spell checker went ahead and got spamvertising everywhere, I noticed, too, huh?
Yeah, didn't like that word either. So the next one is... I don't know what you're doing. 2139. This next sentence from a domain registry or registrar to DNS or hosting service providers. Another comment from Joe stating that only the domain registry or registrar can suspend a domain, and thus they are the only ones who can ultimately stop a fast fluxing domain.
And the reason for my saying that is, you know, if they have a DNS service provider that's not being as cooperative as they like, they just change their DNS. You know, and in terms of hosting providers, this is FastFlux. There is no hosting provider. They're on a compromised broadband, host. So I think the DNS or hosting services provider chunk should be removed.
I think that those are there because, you know, they actually are involved. However, I think your point is quite important that they're involved, but they can't actually directly affect the final outcome for it. For the domain.
So should there be any changes to this line or we leave it as is?
I would say go ahead and remove two DNS or hosting service providers.
I would disagree with that.
I would disagree as well. I would
actually have a problem with the entire sentence. it's just because we said it before.
Well, I mean, like, what hosting service provider would be involved?
Yeah.
You've got a whole context here around detection and identification, et cetera. You know, they're involved. They're being exploited, typically.
There we go.
But no, I mean, because the hosting service providers aren't in the loop at all, because this is being done on broadband, compromised hosts. I like the DNS guys. The DNS guys may be involved, but only until they do something, and then they get replaced.
Right. And ISPs might be better than hosting service providers.
Can we say other hosting, other service providers instead of DNS or hosting?
I could live with that.
Yeah.
Could you repeat that, James?
I would say from a domain registry or registrar, comma, or other service providers.
Okay. That's noted. So then the last one is a comment on 2211.
And that's just a reaction to the comment that, you know, we really can't do anything because if we go ahead and fix this one, there's going to be something else bad that they're going to find to exploit. Well, that may be true, but that doesn't mean we should go ahead and let them have Fast Flux as a freebie without any attempt to control or fix it.
I think you were talking about a comment on the same page, no? The addition that you proposed.
2159. Sorry if we weren't heard there yet.
Yep. Okay.
Which, I'm sorry, what line number are we on, Marika?
The problem is my lines have moved slightly because, of course, I'm adding
text.
I think it's further down on this page, the, I guess it must be 2158. There was an addition proposed by Joe. Despite the availability of a portfolio of exploitable approaches that does not justify seeding FastFlux or any other criminally exploitable technique to the miscreants for their unfettered use and abuse.
And like I said, it's just a reaction to the preceding sentence.
I like that addition.
I don't think I have any problems with that idea, but is miscreants the word we want? Do we want bad actors, criminals?
I like criminals.
I don't know what the right word is.
Miscreants is kind of a Team Cymru term, but I'm not wedded to it. Hmm?
We change to criminals?
Sure.
Okay. And then there's a last comment on line 2211 from Dave related to the sentence, the findings of such audits should then be communicated to the broader community. And Dave adds a comment here saying, one possible corollary addition to this recommendation would be to recommend that ICANN study ways in which it could provide acknowledgement, trust seals as per SSL, or monetary incentives for registrars and registries that voluntarily submit to an audit that measures the implementation of best practices. In the SSL S-World, Tweet, VeriSign, and other certificate authorities operate trusted mark programs. Immersion that implements all the criterion for satisfying the program becomes a trusted party with the ability to indicate so through a trust mark. This is similar to ICANN's accreditation seal. Studies demonstrate that customers choose merchants who earn such seals over competitors. It's reasonable to assume that they would choose among registries and registrars in this manner as well.
I like that addition.
I don't necessarily, this is James, I don't necessarily have any critique of that particular addition. I just have some questions. One is this really a new recommendation? And if so, do we want to capture it as such? And two, this idea of a seal, if we're talking about criminals, if I'm looking to set up a or use some sort of a service provider to conduct a FastFlux exploit, wouldn't I avoid those types of trusted seals? And I'm just trying to explore this idea a little bit because I understand the program of some sort of a seal of approval or just logo that can be displayed, but I'm just wondering if this is a new idea that hasn't fully been thought of.
It's certainly new within the context of this working group, so I think it would have to be a recommendation.
Well, I will confess to having been doing three things at once, one of which was working on an FSAC document where we talk about this, and this was sort of a stream of consciousness observation. It is new here. It is something that will be in a forthcoming FSAC report. It will probably be studied elsewhere. It's not absolutely necessary to include it here if we're going to add a significant amount of discussion and possibly create some point of dissension.
I like the first sentence there, Dave, if you just get rid of the seals. I mean, if you just provide acknowledgement or incentives, I'd probably get rid of monetary, but there's a way to state that briefly. I do like the idea. But,
I would remove the word submit to an audit, and I would just say registries and registrars that voluntarily implement the best practices.
That's a reasonable point here because mentioning the word audit is a sensitive issue, and we actually talk about it in much more detail in the FSAC report. So that's probably a reasonable modification.
Okay, so Marika.
So then it would read after the word community, one possible addition to this recommendation would be to recommend that I can study ways in which it could provide acknowledgement, so that would all be taken out, for registrars and registries that voluntarily implement best practices. Is that correct?
Acknowledgement or incentives.
Okay. So we just take out,
I'm fine with that, but I think ICANN might have trouble with that because there's only one way to incent registries and registrars.
Well, right now there is no way to incent registrars because the agreements are the agreements and the contracts are the contracts. But in future contracts, there might be clauses that basically set some measures
That's a way to obligate registries and registrars. I thought we were incentives.
Incentives would be that if, as an example, your per domain fee is reduced by some percent if you meet the best practices in a measurable manner. There's also the disincentives, which would say if you are a total screw up and you're not doing this, then we charge you more because you're making trouble for everybody else. It's not necessarily unique to registrar services, registration services. It would be something that lots of companies could do, but tend to get bogged down in the details of measurement because that's where all the wiggle room is.
Right. Okay. So,
James, in the next sentence, I would suggest dropping Thought and VeriSign. Just have it say certificate authorities because basically they're both the same company. What about all the other CAs that are out there? We don't want to be showing any favoritism.
Are we adding that?
I think that whole part is actually going away.
Oh, that's going away? Okay. Just as
it's just a comment, and all the comments will be removed. We just added that one sentence to this section.
Great.
And I think that covers it for all the major changing. I don't know if anyone else has any other items they would like to raise or discuss.
in
the last 2 minutes.
Yeah. And actually, I would say that I would like to propose to the group that, we treat this as we're already in extra innings in a lot of different ways with this particular report and project. But I think that this was really good information that we wanted to capture and flush out some of these thoughts and comments The next steps would be, I think, if we can post that revision, Marika, in the next couple of days, and maybe keep it open, not for weeks and weeks, but just for a few more days, give folks an opportunity to see it in its total finished form, and then also to comment on the draft motion that I posted about 2 o'clock this morning, and particularly focusing on the resolve section, because I really was, you know, shooting from the hip in that particular section of the motion.
If I can add one thing to that, because something I discussed with James in relation to the motion, something that the group could consider as well, recommending to the council, is organizing a workshop or meeting in Seoul to discuss the report, and especially the ideas that have been proposed for next steps, and have some feedback maybe from the broader community, what people feel, you know, would be a reasonable way to move forward, or, you know, what would be the best thing to focus on, where there's real broad community support. Just want to see if that's something that this group think would be helpful as a, you know, next step in this whole process.
I personally think it might be more harmful than good to wait and put that into the process. I mean, the council could take this report now and, you know, start acting on it well before Seoul. I don't see what good a public workshop in Seoul is going to do.
No, it's not. I mean, Mike, just to clarify, I don't mean as much before the council decides, but as a way as well to, because I presume the council will look at these next steps and decide to take them forward, and the Seoul meeting could then be a way as well to already involve the community and get some feedback on those next steps and how to take them forward. That was more my thinking.
Yeah, okay, I hear you, but that's also, you know, 3 months from now, and a lot can be accomplished in the meanwhile to get things moving. And I feel like if we make that recommendation to the council, then the council will do nothing until after that workshop happens. And frankly, I don't see what good is going to come out of that workshop. Can't we put the report out to public comment? Doesn't that normally happen with the final report anyway?
I don't think so. Well, I think it normally goes after the, if there are any recommendations that go to the board, then I think there's normally a public comment period after the council adopt the recommendations and before they go to the board. But if there are no recommendations for consensus policies, I don't think normally there's a public comment period. But I presume the council could decide to have a public comment period if they would like to.
That's right. Or we can just decide to take some of the next steps anyway without further public input, because obviously we've had public input throughout this process of the working group. I don't know. I'm pretty heavily against recommending that we do a workshop on this. I frankly just don't find workshops very useful most of the time at ICANN meetings anyway, and I don't see what we're hoping to get out of this one.
Well, my question would be, because a lot of the ideas for next steps are very basic and not very detailed. Well, what would be, what do you think would be the likely scenario for how to take this further? Cause
for example, I think that the council should be recommending to the RAP working group that they consider that recommendation that we've made, that, you know, they look at solutions that would help remedy fast flux exploits as well as all the other registration abuses that that group is looking at. So that's one thing I think the council could do right away. Don't need any further public input on that. To look at the other recommendations really quick, but I don't know. I mean, can you justify what would come out of a public forum on this in 3 months that we need to wait for?
No, it's more, you know, because of course we preparatory work, but I think some of the discussions, like for example the data reporting system, or, you know, ICANN as a best practices facilitator, and as well involving other stakeholders, those are maybe questions that, you know, would benefit from some broader discussion as to how those things should look or how they can be taken further.
But. Well, I think I understand part of what Mike is suggesting, because, well, we've been struggling with the same kind of issue in terms of recommendations in SAC. One of the requests from the board of directors was that when SOs and ACs have make recommendations, especially if some of them result in recommendations that percolate up to the board, that they be very specific and actionable. And so I interpret what Mike is saying more like we've got a specific recommendation for the RAP group. We should tell the council, forward this recommendation to the RAP group. If we have a specific recommendation for FSAC to do something, we should, you know, write the recommendations to specifically task FSAC, or, you know, and as opposed to bring it up for more discussion, which might be enlightening to some people who haven't been involved in the process for the past year, but is probably not going to result in that much more, you know, constructive thinking, and it's probably not going to result in refining the recommendations. Did I capture what you were saying, Mike?
I mean, pretty much. I mean, this report is done. It's not going to be reopened because of a public workshop, for one thing.
No. I mean, I wouldn't question that, but it's more like, who will be the people taking these different recommendations forward? I mean, yes, on the RAP one, that one is obvious, but on the other ones...
We have to pass something along to ICANN. If we're going to actually talk about, you know, ICANN in some way, shape, or form, either helping set best practices or recognizing, you know, recognizing best practices and measuring them, that's on ICANN staff shoulders at that point. And it either falls into the compliance world or into, you know, policy, security, compliance, multi-departmental activity.
And Marika, this is James. I think that, you know, and maybe I agree with Mike, although maybe for slightly different reasons. I don't necessarily want to put a workshop out there just because it gives the impression that we're somehow unfinished. I think we have some packaged recommendations, and you know, each one is directed at, whether it's directed at staff or interested stakeholders or, you know, future PDPs, or successor PDPs, et cetera. And I think that, you know, those could involve workshops or whatever types of involvement. I guess we're leaving it somewhat open-ended, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. So I think I agree that, you know, mentioning a specific means to get community involvement and stakeholder involvement and staff involvement and all that stuff is maybe secondary to just recommending that it happen and then leaving it at that.
Okay.
I would also say that the meeting in Asia is going to be more lightly attended by folks interested in fast flex issues than it would be if it was somewhere, you know, easier to reach or more, you know, inexpensive to reach.
That's the problem I have with workshops in general, is they tend to get way too much weight from staff and others based on the very few people that tend to participate and come to the ICANN meetings. You know, this has been out for public comment. The working group was wide open to anybody to participate. I just don't feel like, you know, a workshop is going to add anything.
No, again, I mean, my idea wasn't to, you know, question or, you know, anything about what's in the report. That's, you know, once this is done, it's done. But it was more looking ahead and, you know, how to move forward with those recommendations in an efficient manner. That was more the thinking. But if everyone feels that all of these can be taken forward just by council action, then, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I felt bad enough writing the resolves clauses that we're leaving this somewhat still open-ended with loose threads, and I would just hate to introduce even more. So,
and one of the things that we might want to do is, you know, schedule a BOP or schedule, you know, with some opportunity to, you know, to summarize, you know, the report for the community. But I think that's different than a workshop, and it could be part of the whole e-crimes or abuse of DNS workshops that we've sort of, you know, run over the past several meetings or something substanding. But I think it would be useful to, you know, to try to help, you know, crystallize some of the, you know, some of the information that is in this big 150-page report, and especially from, you know, one of the objectives I would hope we would try to do is help people understand the difference between a fast-flux attack network and, you know, a production use of volatile networking. I think that is a very, very important distinguishing effort that we need to be involved in, because we're probably among the few people that have actually had to tackle both sides of it. And if our struggle to try to come to agreement and appreciation for both and get both of the communities to actually appreciate that we've made that effort was so hard and long, we might save a lot of other people a lot of frustrating cycles.
Okay. Well, we're over our time here by a little bit here, but I think the consensus is, Marika, that there's some recommendations here that we've tried to translate into action. Not necessarily a punt, but more of a if you choose X, then this is the Y approach, but not doing that in a limiting fashion. And if any other groups want to take up this report as a part of their agenda, I think we certainly are open and encouraging of that without necessarily making a separate and dedicated Fast Flux event at any future meeting. So, can we say that we want to put this draft of motion on the list here, and that if we can close off any comment on this by, let's say by Friday, Saturday time frame. It's not a very long document, and I know that everybody's busy, but I really would like to get at least this part of it fleshed out in a matter of days rather than waiting too long into next week. Does that seem reasonable?
I think so. I have one issue that maybe is quickly covered. The resolve paragraph that says to consider the inclusion of other stakeholders from within and outside ICANN for any FastFlux policy, any future FastFlux policy development efforts. What are we talking about there? That makes it seem like, for some reason we weren't as open as we needed to be or something.
Yeah, I think that, Mike, going back to the recommendations, I think, and forgive me, I did this at 2 a.m., but there's something in the recommendations towards the end about exploring the possibility to involve other stakeholders, and then it lists just a laundry list of all the different groups and law enforcement agencies and all those types of things. And I was trying maybe clumsily to encapsulate that into within and without the ICANN community. So,
I mean, just to note as well, in the report itself, it does say the Fast Track Working Group was open to anyone, had representation from the APWG and ESSEC, and had several members of some of these other organizations. But the working group recognized, however, that ICANN policy development is not a familiar or accessible activity for many organizations, and the FASIC working group encourages further outreach to achieve a broader group. So
yeah,
in the actual report, that is, captured, that there was open and there was participation, but maybe not broad enough.
And Mike, if there's a better way to say that without listing all of those groups, and all those acronyms, I'm all for it. I just tried to.
Okay, I'll wordsmith it. Probably just with another phrase, but something like, "Well, the working group was open and had broad representation, comma, and then the rest of it."
Okay. Okay. Well, let's.
Before I call an end to things, can I just interject one quick thing? On Annex 6, went ahead and actually had a who is substitution there that capitalized who is throughout the whole document, including Annex 6, and that's going to go ahead and actually break like the who is examples that are in there, because who is a Unix command that's all lowercase. So can the who is's that were changed in Annex 6 be unchanged?
Okay.
And then the other thing that's kind of weird about that is the formatting, because originally it was monospaced and then it's in a proportional font. Some of the stuff comes out looking pretty junky. So can that either be changed back to monospaced font for the stuff that's currently looking kind of ragged, or can that go ahead and be lined up with tabs?
Which is as well the same annex you're referring to?
Right. Like on page 114, there's an example of like who is from Google. And in the original who is, it all kind of lines up because it was done monospaced in the output, but now it's kind of junky looking because it's all proportional spaced.
Okay, I get what you mean.
There's other examples of the same sort of thing farther down, but
okay.
The other thing is I'm wondering if we have any issues including things like live email addresses in there. I didn't think about that until I happened to go ahead and see them underlined as well.
Yeah, I think if there's any, you know, we should sanitize that to make sure that we're not putting any specific data in there. Either Xing it out or even changing the entire thing to example.com.
Well, that kind of makes it impossible to actually have the honest-to-God data there. But
yeah, understood.
For things like email addresses or phone numbers.
Yeah, maybe we can just X those out like are done on the comments form. Break it.
Just, you mean in the who has records? That's what we're talking about in the same annex.
Right. Yep.
So phone numbers and emails, fax numbers as well?
I think so.
An address?
I mean, it's all public data, I guess, at this point, but the question is just whether or not that should go ahead and receive sort of permanent placement, if you see what I mean.
Right.
Well, to be perfectly honest, of course, there have been many versions of this report that are posted and have this data as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that, yeah, the ship sailed on this.
Yeah. Let's close the barn doors before the horses get back in.
Right.
Just side mention.
No, it's a good point. It's a good point. Okay. Well, let's, you know, belatedly bring this call to a close. I guess the next steps are we'll be looking for an updated report. I see that Joe has already sent some IETF links for EPSflow, NetFlow, so thank you for that. And Mike, you said you were going to take another look at the results section and maybe wordsmith some of my late night language in there. And then if we can put some hard expiration, you know, non-negotiable ironclad expiration dates on when we can get changes in and get this submitted to council, I think that would be something that all of us could get behind at this point. So I was thinking for the motion that if we can close off comments by the end of this week, and then for the final version of the report, once Marika has it, maybe we give it 4 or 5 days, certainly not much longer than a week, and then we call that complete and polished. Sound good?
Cool.
Sure, okay.
Thanks very much for everyone, and thanks to Marika. She's the one that's probably bearing a lot of the burden on this and some of these changes. So,
thanks to all of you.
So thanks to Marika and staff, and thanks for everyone for helping. You know, it was an hour and 14 minutes here on the call, and I think it probably saved days, if not longer, on the list. So thank you very much for coming in today and to clear up some of these last-minute comments, and we'll see you on the list.
Very good.
Bye, guys.
Thank you for participating in today's conference call. You may now disconnect.
Thank you.